All right. And my coffee.
Okay. I'll just switch the camera around as well. Okay, hi everyone. So for the next session for these slides, basically going to be working on and sort of talking through the decision process a bit with deciding on ratings of risk, and also talk about kind of confidence levels. And there's a few slides here that will hopefully be quite useful to you once you've got copies of the slides to refer back to. If you are in doubt about kind of what level of risk you might need to apply to particular probabilities, then this should act as quite a good guide. So let's make a start. Okay, so this is a bit of repetition. So what we're talking about this week is pest risk analysis. So you're evaluating, it's a process for evaluating the biological or other scientific and economic evidence to determine whether an organism basically is a pest or not, whether it should be regulated, and looking at the strength of any phytosanitary measures to be taken against it, if those need to be improved. So we have our three steps for the pest risk analysis. So we've already covered the initiation process, and we've moved on now to look at the pest risk assessments. And then we'll also be touching on risk management later. So for the risk assessments, at all kind of stages and with all different questions that appear on the PRA tool, you're being asked to assess the risk of various different outcomes. So if you think about risk, essentially it's a product of the likelihood of something happening, as well as the impact that that risk can have. So another way of putting it is you're looking at that probability and then the probability of those potential consequences. How likely is a pest to be introduced in the first place? And then how much harm would it cause if it did get in? So if you're considering these different sort of factors, so risk and probability of introduction, magnitude of impact, you can consider these as kind of formulae. So on the screen here, you can see that essentially the equation for pest risk is a combination of the probability of it being introduced in the first place, the probability of it then spreading, combined with the consequences of that. And probability of introduction, likewise, is the probability of it entering, and then the probability of establishment. And when you're considering the magnitude of the impact, so you're being asked what potential kind of consequences having this pest on your country could have. You want to be considering the impacts on the economy, as well as the environment and the social impacts too. So we already know, having gone through the tool a bit together, that we're looking at really kind of four different areas of risk. So on those tabs that appear on the PRA tool, along the top, you've got your four tabs, which are the probability of entry, probability of establishment, spread, and then the consequences. And the questions that the PRA tool asks you basically kind of fall into different kind of categories. So for example, the probability of entry and establishment are asking you about the likelihood. When it comes to the probability of spread, you kind of need to consider the likelihood of it, but also the magnitude, like how far could it spread, how quickly can it spread. And with the potential consequences there, that's kind of, yeah, the the magnitude. So there are a few questions that come up, and I think we encountered them yesterday when we were working through some PRAs in groups. How can you provide a likelihood and a magnitude for each component? And how can you actually summarize the level of risk based on these four components? So hopefully in the next few slides, I'll give you a bit of guidance on how you can do that. And of course, the outcome of that and your conclusions about the overall kind of risk based on those four components is really important, because this will obviously determine whether you consider it either the pest or the commodity to require any phytosanitary measurements, and also measures and the strength of any of those. So I think we've kind of discussed various different types of pest risk assessments that can be conducted, and I know that perhaps the systems that you're already working with are slightly different to the ones that the PRA tool kind of leads you through. But across all types of risk assessments, you'll be having kind of scores for the entry, the establishment, the spread, and the impact. But you can, of course, have different types of PRAs. So there's the quantitative ones and the semi-quantitative. And any of these scores are going to be actual values. But in the qualitative PRAs, which the PRA, CABI's PRA tool is, often there's three, four, or five different levels of scores for each of these four categories. And for the CABI PRA tool, we have negligible, low, medium, and high. So this table just kind of summarizes the difference, so that you're kind of, aware of the differences, I suppose, between the way that the CABI PRA tool works as a qualitative PRA compared with a quantitative. So as I've said already, there's the four kind of scores from negligible to high. With the type of data that you're working with, it can be qualitative or semi-quantitative. So you can have some areas of the PRA that perhaps do have scores, and in the next few slides, I can show an example of that. Often with the quantitative PRAs, you're actually looking at sort of statistics, and you'll be calculating various different statistics and even producing models potentially from your value scores. Whereas with qualitative, it's a lot more based on expert judgment and documentation, which is why the references that you put into your PRA on the PRA tool are so important, because they back up everything that you're saying if you don't have values necessarily to include. Of course, you can include values in your PRA on the PRA tool, and we do encourage you to try and do that as much as possible. For example, looking at kind of rates of spread and values of any kind of economic consequences of pests. So it's good to get as much of that into your PRAs to provide evidence. So as I said, there are a few kind of recommendations for working with this type of PRA on the PRA tool. So providing as much written justification as you can makes your PRA a lot stronger. As I said, using quantitative information when it's available. Costs and rates of spread, for example, being as precise as possible in your text. And again, using those reliable references and linking as well to online pages can help just for example, if you're passing it on to a colleague, they can quickly refer to those resources. And of course, having a more thorough PRA does make it more acceptable to the stakeholders too. So when we're looking at qualitative risk rating, these are kind of the guide and the descriptions of the various different ratings might help you to kind of make a decision on those when you're considering them. So for example, the section on the left-hand side here, if you're considering the consequences of your pest or your consignment, high would be an irreversible or very severe damage. And for medium, you would consider this to be having significant damage. Below, you consider this to have a pest that would have some damage, but that it could be minimized with mitigation measures. And for negligible, you've assessed that basically there would be no significant impacts. And then if you look on the right-hand side in the probability, here are some kind of guide percentage figures that might help as well for you to consider what the probability of something might be. So high is obviously highly likely. We would say at least 75% likely to occur. Medium, we would say likely in some circumstances, but not all. And so 30 to 75%. Low, it is unlikely, but it has been known to occur. And then negligible would be very unlikely. And it has never occurred in any similar circumstances. So when you're looking at potentially other, data from other countries where it's a risk, but it hasn't happened yet, you might be able to consider that it's very unlikely to happen to your country as well. There's also the option to basically use a risk matrix to come to your decision on whether, as I said before, the risk is a product of the probability of something happening and then the potential impact of that. So this risk matrix basically provides you with a tool to take your consequences rating and your probability and combine those to decide on your overall risk rating. So for example, if you had, if you had a probability of something happening, of a pest being introduced to your country, for example, was medium, and the consequence of that being a problem and having an impact is low, this will provide you with a risk rating of low. So you're following the matrix there. You can see that even if the probability is high, if the consequences of that introduction is negligible, that actually gives a risk rating of negligible. So the whole kind of top column there provides you with a risk rating of negligible. So just going back a little bit, this is with the categorization stage of the risk assessment. So even at this point, you can potentially rule out having to do a PRA if you have considered the different risks of these and the probabilities of these different elements, and you've understood that the risk is negligible, then you'll understand that the pest doesn't require any phytosanitary measures. So when we're considering the probability of entry, I know that there are, I think, some pointers and some things that the PRA tool guides you on slightly. I think there are a couple of factors that it says that you should consider when it comes to that part of the PRA. But this is just a bit more of a kind of comprehensive list of factors to consider when you're thinking about the probability of entry. So I think it prompts you to think about seasonal timing in the PRA tool, perhaps the prevalence in the area of origin. There are also other things to consider, like has it been intercepted before? If not, perhaps the probability of entry you would consider to be lower. Feed and conditions of transport, even if it does arrive, is it likely to have died in transit? I know a few of you have mentioned about finding dead raccoons, so I guess depending on where they've come from, they've not been able to survive the journey. So probability of entry. For a high rating, you would need to have evidence that it's very likely or certain to enter. You'll likely have many pathways for this pest. Or if it's a commodity, very high volumes and a regular frequency of those commodities arriving. As well, if you are getting live interceptions of that pest or anything within commodities, it's very likely that it will enter. If the phytosanitary measures aren't adequate. So for medium probability, we're looking at entry of a pest that might require a combination of different events. So that reduces potentially the likelihood of that happening. But there have also been reports of interceptions in other countries. So you might not have had it so far, but other countries in the neighboring area might have recently reported them. For a low probability and risk, it's unlikely, but it is possible. In these situations, perhaps the transport conditions aren't sufficient, or there are good management practices in place that make it unfavorable for entry. And then negligible, the probability of entry is extremely low, and there haven't been any reports of a similar pathway. Definitely. So yeah, definitely want to consider the human. Any parts and shoes as well? Soil on shoes. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so that was looking at the probability of entry. So if we look next at the probability of establishment, the factors to consider include the suitability of the climate. So is your pest or your commodity coming from somewhere with a very different climate? If so, it's likely that there's low or negligible probability. Are there suitable hosts and habitats within your country for this pest to establish? Are there any vectors that could increase the likelihood of establishment? You might want to look into the biology and open the data sheet and have a look at that section to understand, for example, how many generations a pest might have in a particular climate, and as well consider the chances of it being able to reproduce quickly. As well, considering any existing cultural and pest management practices in place. And also the potential for there to be natural enemies that could actually potentially reduce the chance of something establishing, for example, a predator. Yeah, if we look at those different ratings there, again, high is very likely, and there's probably going to be very similar climates, the same hosts that's been reported on in its place of origin, same habitats and vectors are widely distributed in your country. And it may even have established, well, it's like very likely to have established elsewhere. For medium, perhaps it's likely to establish just in part of your country. If you've got very kind of mountainous region that might not be suitable for certain things to exist, but in the lowlands, it would be found there. There's also the chance that any temporary populations that do establish could adapt. So that would give you a kind of medium, be included in the medium rating. Below, it's unlikely that the pest will establish itself in most parts of the country. For example, it might only be able to survive in protected environments like greenhouses, potentially, but not elsewhere, or just in mild winters, if you experience winters. And its vectors might be absent or sparse. And then negligible. Essentially, there's no potential for this to establish. You don't have the same climate, the same any of the hosts or the vectors available. So, as I said before, the probability of introduction is a combination of the probability of entry and the probability of establishment. And here's another risk matrix that can help you to decide what your risk rating is for the probability of introduction. So again, if you look along the kind of top row there, where you have a very low, let's look at probability of entry, first of all, because that's the starting point. If you have a negligible probability of entry, but you do actually have a high probability of establishing if it does get in, that gives you a rating of low. So, and then of course, in any situation where the probability of entry is medium to high, the probability of establishment is high, you're getting your risk rating. Okay. Any questions so far on that? Qualitative. Yeah, but I think. I guess you could assign numerical values. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
To the ratings.
Yeah, I would say it's only the sort of rough guide. Mm-hmm. can't so in that respect, so we have these kind of numbers or thresholds a little bit as the guidance.
Okay, so moving on to the probability of spread, the kind of factors that you're going to want to consider here are, for example, whether it's spread elsewhere, whether there are any natural barriers that's mentioned earlier about the mountain range that's dividing Venusia. Yeah, that's right. So that's obviously going to be a barrier for the spread of the iguana that was mentioned. Human-mediated transport. So can things, as we've just mentioned, hitch a ride, and maybe it's only present at the port, but it gets caught up in the wheels of a vehicle moving out from there and spreads from there. You might want to consider whether there's any issues with waste disposal practices that might encourage spread across a region, and potentially consider any models that might exist to help you consider whether it could spread. And if we're looking at the ratings here, the guidance basically kind of looks at time frames as well. So in a situation where you have a high probability of spread, it's likely to reach all potential areas in less than 5 years. This is something that's, just a kind of guideline really, but it's something that can maybe help you decide whether it is high or medium, for example. So if an invasion has happened in another country similar to yours and it's spread rapidly in less than 5 years, then it's very likely that it would also do the same in your region, unless, for example, you have a different, you might have some natural enemies present that aren't present in the other country. As well, if there are multiple means of the pest spreading, it's very likely that it will spread and spread quickly. For medium rating, it is likely to spread, but it might take a bit longer, basically. It might not reach all potential areas in 5 years. There'll probably be some human-mediated transport within a medium likelihood of spread. Below, some potential for spread locally within a year, perhaps. But there's low capability of bridging gaps, for example, between different suitable hosts and habitats. So, there's not suitable habitats across the whole area, basically. And for negligible, there's extremely low potential for natural spread, and it requires very specific requirements for establishment. Okay, so moving on to the fourth element of the risk assessment, so the potential consequences. Here's a list of the factors to consider for potential consequences. So obviously things like crop yield losses or just a reduction in the quality of the crop. There would be factors such as vectoring of other pests. So is it, it's not just a problem in itself, but it's also going to be vectoring a disease. The costs of control are also a big thing to consider. If you're going to be having to spend a huge amount of money trying to control it, then that's proves a huge risk. The ecosystem services that might be affected by this pest, and the social impacts as well. If you do conclude that the potential consequences of your pest or your commodity is negligible, then you can stop the PRA at this point. If we're looking at the ratings here, for a high rating, to give a high rating, there would need to be major damage to your crops or to the environment. It would be very costly to control and will also affect your ability to trade. Medium would be a moderate economic or environmental or in fact social impact. Low is the minor impact, and also it's likely that you have existing mitigation measures in place to limit the consequences of that invasion. And negligible is of course no impact expected. And there's a note just here that you could consider sort of thresholds of impact. So economic thresholds, you know, if you consider what it might cost, and if you need to make sure that the costs of any invasion don't exceed a particular threshold, then that can also, you can also take that into account when you're considering the risk. Will it take us above the economic threshold that our country can sort of withstand? So just a guide here for estimating crop loss. There might already be figures out there and available that you can just kind of copy and paste into your PRA for that. But if you find any kind of elements of this equation basically that you can use to actually calculate crop loss, if the figures aren't available, you can also basically provide an estimate for your country by considering the yield loss in another country where the pest is invaded, and then it's basically a multiplication of the yield per hectare that you have in your country. Take into account the price per ton and the acreage as well that's grown on your country, and that should give you an estimate of direct costs of crop loss. So yeah, you can Google those and hopefully find them. Either the FAO stat is a good resource for those kind of data, but you probably all have those statistics to hand as well, or your own kind of agricultural department databases. So that brings us to the next step, which is trying to make a conclusion about the overall risk for your PRA. There's another matrix table here, basically, that kind of covers the probability of introduction and spread and combines that with the potential consequences. So you can use this as a guide as well. You can see here that we have at the, you can't see my mouse, can you? Medium and high ratings of overall risk in the bottom right-hand corner of that. For these categories, the medium and high, we would then go on to do the risk management section of the PRA, because clearly the risk is high enough to warrant new or modified management practices to ensure that it doesn't become a problem. If you have negligible or low risk ratings overall, that's where you can finish your PRA. Basically not, that would not take you on then to the risk management section. So when you're asked basically whether the pest requires any phytosanitary measures, if your answer is yes, you'll be looking at a probability of medium or high of entry and establishment, and the consequences would also be need to be medium or high. The same can occur if you have a probability that's low, but the consequences are actually high. So if you remember from that matrix table, even if the probability of entry is low, the impact is high, you still will want to assign risk management measures for this pest. Where the probability of introduction is negligible and the threshold for your kind of acceptable or unacceptable consequences of introduction aren't met, that's where the PRA stops. So as you saw yesterday when you were trying out the pathway initiated PRA and the pest initiated as well. The PRA tool asks you to provide, although you don't necessarily need to in all sections, assigning a confidence level for your risk rating. This is quite an important feature really, because you can never be certain. We've already covered that really. You can't be certain. This is an estimate. This is a kind of an educated guess. And it's all part of any PRA, because you're using kind of historical or not quite sort of match data to predict the future. You're using data that's from a different area, and there may be very slight, subtle differences between those situations. You can't always get the information you need. So for example, there's kind of lag phases, lag times of introduced species. So it might not have been reported as well, but it's become established somewhere. And I suppose just the communication as well of any very new pests that have arrived. So when you select your confidence level for your risk rating, it doesn't directly affect the risk that you've assigned, but it does just allow the stakeholders, and in your kind of final report, it allows you to kind of to show really sort of based on the information available, your level of confidence of those risks. And in a way, it just documents the uncertainties that you might have. So for example, an importer, if they came back to you and said, well, you said that it would, making kind of predictions, and if there's a claim that's made that's disputed, it kind of gives you a sort of backup really to say, well, this was uncertain. This was just a kind of an estimate. And it allows as well any stakeholders to actually just see the transparency of the process. So if they're questioning a rating, you can say, well, this was, the confidence in this was low, but it's an educated guess. These are just examples of various different sources of uncertainty. Like I said, there may be a lack of data. You might have to do this PRA really quickly in 2 days, and there's not enough time to really dig deep into the data that might be available. So you can only base it on what you know and what you've come to understand during the process. The methodology of the PRA itself, well, for example, there might be pathways that aren't able to be considered or haven't been considered in various other literature that you're drawing from. And then there's just kind of the randomness of nature, random events that can happen. Pest and human behavior isn't always predictable. So ways that we can reduce any uncertainty that we might have, we can try and collect more data if we have time. Also validating data with observation. So you might read something in a document and then you're able to back that up by, you know, contacting an expert or contacting a colleague who can validate that, yes, this has been found here. There's also the potential to actually do a statistical analysis, or at least find analyses that have been done that you can draw on. Original sources are always the best. So if you are able to find the original sources of various pieces of information that you've added to your PRA, this will just give you more confidence that it's not just kind of hearsay, or it's not just being misrepresented somewhere else. And then, of course, if you are able to consult experts during the process of the PRA, or even have it peer reviewed, this can boost your confidence and reduce the uncertainty. So this is just a guide. Obviously, I think it's fairly obvious which data sources might be more reliable compared to ones with lower reliability. You're obviously all able to consult the NPPO websites and the surveillance that happens through that. Any peer-reviewed literature, particularly very recent peer-reviewed literature. There are lots of very useful databases and websites, and hopefully you might already have an impression of which are more reliable than others, and you can base your decision kind of on that. Expert opinions are useful, and you can have some confidence in that, but potentially, I think we were discussing before, you might not have an expert in a particular field. So any data sources with kind of lower reliability would be, for example, news articles. You might not know where that information's come from. As well, kind of the older the data sources, the less reliable they'll be, and things will likely have changed since they were published. So this slide is looking at this is basically talking about the confidence levels again, and where you can record your level of uncertainty of a particular risk. So the guide on the right-hand side here, this kind of, guides you into what your confidence level might be when you put it into your PRA tool. So if you do have area and species specific information available, you've got direct observations, of course, you can be pretty confident that is the case. Also, if you've got multiple references and they all come to the same conclusion, then you can be pretty confident that is the case. With a medium confidence level, perhaps you've got some specific information, but maybe a small number of references. There might just be one or two, and perhaps those two references that you have with that information actually vary a bit in their conclusions. So you might think that this particular risk, you can be potentially kind of, you can consider your risk to be high, for example, but if that's just from one reference and potentially another that doesn't quite draw the same conclusions, then you would categorize that as medium confidence. So you can rate a risk but still have low confidence in that. You can take an educated guess, but you would rate it as low confidence because perhaps there isn't actually any official published data on it. You've had to use unpublished reports and personal communications, or perhaps in the case that you have found different references and they completely oppose each other in their conclusions. So hopefully that gives you a bit more of a kind of guide really to filling out those sections and to assigning your risks to the different sections of the PRA, and also to see how assigning the confidence levels can just kind of give you an extra piece of information when you come to make your kind of overall risk rating. That's it. Are there any questions on that, or do you want to go back to any slides or? Any questions? Perhaps.
Perhaps I have something to add to this. Of course, we didn't have any time to meet to yesterday to create the PRA. You're confronted with a lot of questions in the risk assessment part, particularly to answer to the information. And only the gist of it is really that the more information you can put in these boxes, the better they are referenced as scientific evidence. And the easier it is then to kind of give confidence level. So you shouldn't start the other way around, kind of thinking, what is the likelihood of the species findings the most? I think it's high. And then start putting the box. You should do always the other way around. First, gather the evidence. And then say, yeah, oh, well, there's actually a literature here which shows these species, many hosts, and know that on our islands, at least a good range of superheroes are present. And that is fine. I'm pretty sure that that's the case. There's got a high confidence level. The good thing, the positive thing as well, is through linking the PRA tool with the crop protection compendium and the invasive species compendium, there's a lot of information there which is as well referenced and peer reviewed. So a lot of information there, all the information in these data sheets lead to references, which you then as well can take out and put in the reference box of the PRA and to document that you didn't make up anything out of the air. But just wanted to add this. Any more other questions for Susie? I know it's that this is probably an area where a lot of people struggle a little bit, particularly applying confidence levels, and it's because you can't give any hard prescriptions. If that's the case, you give that level. It's all a little bit kind of, as well, kind of your personal judgment is required.
Can I say something? It's not a question, but I was glad that the presentation was made, and that sometimes you find yourself trying to figure out this medium to high and low or whatever. So the presentation was good in the sense that you have something now you can use as some sort of method to allow you to see which of those particular things you can use in the area. So I'm glad for it, and it would go a long way in using it to achieve what we want to out in the particular PR. So I'm glad in that respect. I'll see how we use it and get back to you all on it.
Thank you. And of course, we provide this presentation as well as one of the kind of supporting material to give you some guidance. That is.
My thought, when yesterday we were going through the tool, you know, when you pull up your pest list, there may be one type of the same pest, let's say aphids, and there are different species. And well, you are advised that you can do one assessment of one type and the others you can make that statement. Can the tool, after you have done that one assessment and you want to forego assessing the remaining species of the aphids, can the tool sort of accommodate eliminating further assessment on, or give you that option to eliminate further assessment of aphids?
No, not on that level. It's only as we mentioned yesterday, that when you go to the, for these other species, to the into the risk management area, that you can have the possibility to tick the box, this species or any measures are already in place to cover the first aphid species, which has been properly assessed. And so we don't need to kind of develop any specific measures for this species, because that is already covered through the assessment of another species. So we need to mention that specifically with the other species. And they will still be then listed as species which require phytosanitary measures. But these measures are only explicitly kind of put together, and the risk is as well only specifically assessed for the other species to save time. At the moment, I'm not so happy that it is that far end, the other end of the risk assessment in the risk management, to tick that box and explain that. So I would rather prefer to have it right at the beginning of the risk assessment process, when you deal straight away with the large list of species, that you can click something there and put that information immediately in there, and you don't deal with it anymore. So that's not in place at the moment, but we're working on this. If there aren't any more questions, because we're already close at lunchtime, so I think it's no use to use just 5 minutes to get started with jointly working on a example risk assessment, and it's kind of looking what contents you might want to put into the individual boxes, and probably just leave that as a first session after lunch. We start doing that maybe together for. Sure.
We can do our photo now, actually.
Oh, yeah. And do that after lunch and see how long it takes us. And then we still have a little bit more time in the afternoon to play around with the tool and do a little bit of the same as yesterday. Susie mentioned it would be good. Now, what we want to do when we go to lunch, that we perhaps gather first in front of the hotel near the beach to take a group photo of everybody, so that we have a bit of a something to.
Cool.
Okay, then I would say we try to reconvene then in an hour's time at 1 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Before we start after lunch, can we get a copy?